You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Well, there it is. As Nell said, a new Hamilton Tiger Cats single season record, and no one could be happier than the guy who he took the record from, Andy Fantuz. Into tight traffic. This looks like it's picked. It is picked by Richard Leonard. Here goes Alex Green. End zone bound. Touchdown bound. These Cats are roaring now. Third down and inches, and Masoli calls his number. Look out, Jeremiah Masoli could score. He is going to score. Touchdown. 59-yard romp, Jeremiah Masoli.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Okay, Mike, lots of Ticats stuff to talk about today. Some good, some bad. Let's start with the good. Let's start with the game that took place here in Hamilton last Friday. And I think as far as final games go, in a season where the team will not make the playoffs, I think Friday night's contest went pretty well, don't you think? Ticats slaughtered the Alouettes 33-0. And for a little context here, that's the first Ticats shutout since 1974. That was 8 years before I was born. And it was the first time the Owls have been shut out since 1997. But I do think both of us remember 1997 fairly well. The Ticats now end the season at 6-12. And I guess the next thing we really have to look forward to now is that, barring a trade, they will pick second in the upcoming CFL draft. So before we get into specifics about the game, Mike, your overall thoughts on what we saw in Friday's slaughter of the Alouettes?
Well, just a great overall performance, offense, defense. I mean, the special teams were okay. I didn't really notice anything, but offense, defense, I mean, you can't ask for anything better from the defense. They got a shutout. They dominated the Alouettes all game long. Yes, it was the Alouettes, and yes, they had Schiltz in as quarterback, and then they brought the other Pipkin in as quarterback later on in the game, and we all know that those guys aren't starting quarterbacks, at least at this time. But, you know, you play who you play, and they gave him a whooping.
They sure did give him a whooping. But I got to be honest with you, I'm really impressed that you did not hesitate when saying Schiltz's name, because at the game, I kept calling him Schlitz. Yeah. I kept calling him Schlitz, and I could not help myself. So you calling it, nailing it the first time, I'm mightily impressed, sir.
Well, I'm a professional, you know.
I guess I'm not. So let's talk specifics now. Let's start with the offense. And man, just an all-around fabulous game from that side of the ball. 486 total yards, 329 through the air, 173 on the ground. Four different players found the end zone. Man, what more can you say? Just a magnificent effort, and one that should, but likely won't, silence some of those critics we were talking about last week that said June Jones's system is too predictable. And we've seen this team, sure, it was against Ottawa and against Montreal, but the two teams that the Ticats played twice under Jones, Ticats scored 36 and 33 points against them. So the film on Jones's offensive system would have been there for both Ottawa and Montreal, and neither of those teams could stop it. And yeah, the Owls obviously in a bit of a tailspin here, but I don't know. I think that June Jones's system, if it is too predictable, it hasn't been predicted yet.
What are we, you know, just a couple of fans that said that it's too predictable. I mean, no offense. I mean, I'm just a fan too. But, I mean, he's been in the league for 10 games now this season. And every single game, they seem to rack up the yardage, rack up the points. So I just don't see it being too predictable. He's mixed in the run well. His passing plays are working to a T. So, you know, I've said it many times, but I want to see this offense again next year, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Speaking of things I think we both want to see next year, let's talk about Jeremiah Masoli. You were on his bandwagon before I was. I was surprised when you jumped aboard the Masoli starter train, but you did, and there's no denying that under June Jones, Jeremiah Mazzoli was the man. In this game, 28 for 37, that's a 75.7% completion rate, 318 yards, one touchdown, and of course, 88 yards rushing on seven carries, including that 58-yard run on the game and season's final touchdown. He was magnificent in this one. He looked poised in the pocket. He was making plays with his feet. He finishes the year with 3,177 yards, 63.7% completion percentage, 15 TDs, 5 picks to go along with 446 yards on the ground and 4 touchdowns. His interception percentage, believe it or not, tops amongst all regular starters. So the other starting quarterbacks that started the majority of the season in the league, and Mazzoli tops when it comes to interception percentage. That's phenomenal for a guy that had a reputation of turning over the ball. Frankly, this guy's a baller, Mike. He proved over these last 10 games that he can be a starting quarterback in this league and be successful.
He certainly has. You know, he's just improved, it seemed, every single week. I was a little bit down on him in a couple games early on where I said that I didn't think he was a starting quarterback, and I was wrong. This guy is a dual threat, and we're not talking about a guy like Nealon Green who can't pass the ball and can just run. This guy can chuck it, and we've seen the improvement through these 10 games where he has – it seems like there has been less and less turnovers in his game as the season has progressed. So this guy is a starter, like you said, and he will be a starter next year if it's in Hamilton or if it's somewhere else.
Yeah, I think of his 5 interceptions, I believe it's 1 in the last 7 games. And that's incredible. Like, if he was to start a full season and was to throw, say, 10 interceptions, you wouldn't bat an eye. That's among the league's elite. We mentioned it last week when he only had one touchdown pass this game. So he had 14 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. Finishes the season 15 TDs, 5 picks. That's a 3-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. That ranks among the elite passers, the Mike Rileys, the Bo Levi Mitchells, guys like that. That is the numbers. The total numbers aren't there, but the averages and the ratios are there that simply show Jeremiah Mazzoli is amongst the league's elite. I'm not saying he's an elite quarterback. I'm not saying if he started 18 games that he would win 14. But what we saw over this 10-game span shows and should show everyone that he can be a upper echelon starting quarterback in the CFL.
Yeah, and I think that the offensive system is tailored. It's perfect for Jeremiah Mazzoli. I don't think that if he was in a system where he sits back in the pocket and chucks it every play like a Ken Austin system, I don't think he would be as successful and you would see those interceptions go up. But in this system where he is passing, running, he's handing the ball off to Alex Green or whoever might be back there, he's being protected and he's just thriving in this offensive system.
Another guy that thrived in this system is a guy we've been talking about for weeks, Brandon Banks. He did fail to get 100 yards in this game. He only had 76 yards on 7 catches, but he did eclipse the 1,000-yard mark on the season. We've been talking about it for months now, but man, just an incredible career renaissance for Speedy B. He did have the one rushing touchdown in this game, too, on that really, really near ridiculous option play that, like, in no way should that have ever been thrown. But, man, when it works, it works.
Like, it wasn't like a set option play, right? I mean, he just kind of saw him out there and chucked
it
sideways.
And just threw it. He had to, right? There's no way they could have designed it that way.
No. I mean, that's the longest option pass in the history of option passes if it was designed that way, which I don't think it was. But, you know, just a play by Mazzoli where he made things up and made things happen. So that's the kind of quarterback he is. He's an exciting player to watch.
Yeah, but it's funny, speaking about Banks, he didn't get 100 yards. He only had 76 yards. He only had 7 catches. Yeah. That just tells you, man, how far he's come in the last 10 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And the guy, he had his problem with his drops earlier on in the season and maybe through his career, but it seems like everything that's thrown his way, he is coming down with. Even the contested passes, you know, even those tough catches, he's coming down with. So I just can't say enough good things about Brandon Banks as a receiver.
Another guy we can't not say good things about. Luke Tasker had an absolute whale of a game. Finished the game as the leads, as the team's leading receiver with 102 yards. But obviously, I think everyone who's listening to this knows the most notable thing Tasker did in this one was break Andy Fantuzzi's record for catches in a season by Hamilton Tigercat. Fantuzzi set that record last year with 101, and Tasker finished this year with 104. And he tied for second in the league in catches with S.J. Green behind. You know what? Instead of me telling you, who do you think led the league in catches this year?
Who? That's, I'm going to say Zylstra.
Andrew Harris.
Wow.
Andrew Harris had 105 catches this year to lead the league. So Tasker, technically, with S.J. Green, leading receiver, wide, like receiver, slot back receiver, with catches. But yeah, Andrew Harris, 105 catches. That took me by surprise.
Yeah, you just don't see that very often, a running back leading the league in receptions. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but Tasker also set personal records for yards in the season. He finished with 1,167, which surpassed his 2015 total of 1,066. Obviously, his catch is personal best because he set the team record. He didn't have it before. And he had 7 touchdown catches this year, which was also a career high. We talked about it before we started recording. It kind of snuck up on us how good of a year Luke Tasker had.
Right, because you just didn't really know. It just snuck up on us. I guess that maybe he wasn't, like all the players, they weren't really racking up numbers in the first half of the season. And then I guess he just, maybe it was because Brandon Banks, right? He's just been so amazing in this last half of the season. He's overshadowed Tasker a bit.
Yeah, that's what as you were talking that, I was like, why did we not think of this? And you mentioned Brandon Banks. I think that's exactly what it was. Over the second half of the year, we've been talking a lot about Banks, talking a lot about Mazzoli, talking a lot about the run game first with C.J. Gable, then Alex Green. Right. Tasker kind of flew under the radar and had this really, really great season. Another guy that kind of flew under the radar, Jalen Saunders. He's the last of the third of Hamilton's trio of 1,000-yard receivers we're going to talk about. But clearly, this kid had an amazing, amazing rookie campaign. Finished this game with 7 catches for 97 yards, including a beautiful 42-yard catch and run that was just awesome. And believe it or not, Jalen Saunders is the Ticats' leading receiver for the 2017 season. He finishes 3 yards ahead of Luke Tasker with 1,170 yards. And to think about this, incredibly, in the almost 150-year history of football in Hamilton, this is the first time ever that this team has had three receivers surpass the 1,000-yard mark in the same season. And I'm sure we probably thought this was possible at the start of the season. We're probably thinking, well, Tasker will have 1,000, Tolliver will have 1,000, Brian Timms will have 1,000, Kevin Elliott could have 1,000. Exactly. But if we would have said, if any of us would have said, oh, here are the 1,000-yard receivers for the Ticats, Brandon Banks, Luke Tasker, and Jalen Saunders, people would have gone, who was Saunders? And said, are you high? Why are you picking Banks to get 1,000-yard receiving? Right. But at the end of the season, those are the guys that did it, and that's pretty impressive for the see all these kind of records fall in a Ticats season that we thought was going to just like when it started, the 0-8 start, like nothing was going right, and at the end of the season, it's new catch record, personal best for Tasker, 3,000-yard receivers, Brandon Bank, like just all these things kind of coalesced at the end here, made the last half of the season really exciting, really fun to watch.
I've really enjoyed. I mean, it's hard to enjoy the league as much when your team stinks, but in the second half of the season, it's been fun to watch this team. And I just want to touch on the Tasker record. Man, Fantuzzi had a hell of a season last year because he was out. What game did he get hurt?
I want to say he missed the last 2.5 games.
Okay, I thought it was a little bit more than that.
I know he was hurt in the Edmonton game, but it was like early. It was like third series. I don't even think he had a catch in the game. Might have had one, and he got hurt in that game. And I know he missed the season finale against Montreal, and I know he missed the game in Ottawa that I attended. And I think the Edmonton game was the week before that, so we basically missed about 3 games and still had 100. That's where you're going with it, obviously. He missed all those games, still had 101. Yeah,
so he could have had, who knows, 15, 20 more catches in those last 2.5 games. So, you know, it's just remembering what Fantuzzi can bring to this team, and hopefully he can come back next year and really, you know, help this team out a lot.
For sure. Speaking of helping this team, Mike, Alex Green had a pretty decent game in this one. I think it's fair to say that the running game took a bit of a backseat the last couple of games after we had spent so many of the early June Jones games. They're establishing a run game. They're establishing a running game. And And it's not like that, you know, Green had a pretty strong finish to the season. He ran the ball 11 times this one for 76 yards and scored a touchdown and finishes the year with 447 yards and 5 TDs. And he only played in 6 games, 5 touchdowns, 6 games. That's not too bad. It's going to be kind of exciting and kind of nice seeing what Alex Green can do with a full season under him. It's got me pretty excited for next year watching him play. And if Jones comes back and we get this system that does like to run the ball, even though it didn't the last couple of weeks, I think this could be pretty dynamic offense.
Jones, you know, there's not a reluctancy to run the ball. I mean, he came from the run and shoot, and that's a lot of passing. But with Austin, we knew that he just didn't like running the ball at all. But we see with Jones that he's willing to run the ball if the team will be successful, and that's a great thing to see.
Yeah, and then the last thing we're going to talk about here, Mike, your favorite part of the offense, the offensive line. I thought they had another stellar game. You know, it's we've been slurping these guys since pretty much Labor Day, and they allowed two sacks this one, and they allowed two quarterback pressures. But I thought for the most part, the line kept the Owls defense at bay and opened up holes in the running game to make plays and let Jeremiah Mazzulli sit back there and make some big throws. We know 4 of these 5 guys will definitely be back next year, and I think it would be great to see that 5th guy, free agent to be Tony Washington, also back next year. It's almost like and similar in the ways that we were talking how terrible this team was to start the year, all the same things we talk about week in, week out, people probably tired of it, but this offensive line from Labor Day on has just been fantastic. I don't think there's really any other way to put it. And yeah, it might be boring to talk the same old, but look, this unit went out there and they manhandled Montreal's defensive front, and they just played great.
They deserve everything they get. They deserve the praise because, you know, that was one of the biggest problems on this team earlier on in the season was Zach's getting killed because the offensive line wasn't playing good enough. Now they are. They're playing great. And, you know, that's one of the biggest things – one of the biggest improvements that I've seen throughout the season is Jeremiah Mazzoli's having time. You know, he is a scrambly guy and he can get out of trouble, but when he's in the pocket just looking for that pass, he has time to go through his reads. And it's too bad we couldn't see more. It's too bad they couldn't help out Zach that way earlier on in the season.
For sure, for sure. All right, Mike, I think it's time to turn it over to you and turn it over to the defensive side of the football. And speaking of turnovers, the defense had a few of those, had a shutout. I'm sure there's a ton of stuff you want to talk about, so kick it off, buddy.
The first person I want to talk about is Adrian Tracy. Early on in the season, he was not starting, and he's been starting for most of the games, the last half of the season, if not all of them, and he's been putting in the work. This game, he had 2 quarterback sacks, 5 defensive tackles. The guy's a baller. Just can't say enough about him. Simone Lawrence, we were talking about it earlier before the show. You're really high on him. He was flying around there. Larry Dean, once again, incredible. I mean, they just totally shut down this Alouettes offense. And, you know, they're a professional football team. So whoever you're playing against, if you can get a shutout against a professional football team, you're doing a hell of a job.
Yeah, Adrian Tracy, speaking of a guy who kind of flew under the radar, you're right. He wasn't starting, wasn't playing at parts in the early part of the season. They trade John Chick. He gets in. He basically becomes a no-brainer start on the defensive line. I think he ended up with something like 9 or 10 sacks on the season. And it's like that's a really quiet – I think he even led the team in sacks. Like that's a really quiet, like, near double-digit sack season. It's just I thought he was – especially the coming down the stretch here in these last few games, when guys you could say – guys could have gone through the motions and they could have given up. And I think seeing both the offense and the defense still out there making plays, still trying to win football games, speaks to a lot of character that these guys have. And I think Adrian Tracy kind of embodies that character. Because like, didn't he have a 2-sack game, I think, the game before, the home game before this one? Like, he was out there just killing it.
Yeah, and the secondary, once again, one of the weak points coming into the season and the first half of the season, and they have been stellar, just amazing this last half of the season. Courtney Steven had a good game, an interception for him. Once again, Richard Leonard, you know, a beautiful game. This kid is just, you know, he's blown me away this season. He was the lone bright spot earlier on in the season, He had two interceptions this game. You know, he had that trouble with the attempted lateral, but I'll give him a break on that. He was just trying to make a play and make things exciting. But this guy, I'm really looking forward to seeing him in a Ticat uniform for years to come. I hope that's the case.
Yeah, the only issue with Leonard is if he keeps playing like this, I think teams down south might come calling. Because, man, what a rookie campaign he put in. But the secondary as a whole, Mike, it's, again, another concern we had in June is gone in November, even though this team is also gone and not playing in the playoffs in November. But, man, just some of these young guys out here. Him, Unamba, I thought had a great game again. Didn't really record much on the stat sheet. But, man, just seeing these young guys out there flying around, making plays, not afraid to make a play on the ball because they know that if I don't get it, I got the guy behind me who will make the tackle if I miss. Because on both those interceptions by Leonard, he went and fought for the ball, especially the second one. He went and he broke on it, went and got it. And it's one of those ones where if he doesn't get it, that's a catch, and that's a big catch for the Owls.
He kind of jumped around the receiver and, like, made a beautiful catch. He didn't bump him to get that pass interference call. I thought that second interception was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, I've liked him as the season has gone on. You can't say enough good things about him. He's still my rookie of the year pick. And it's James Wilder had a great game. It's just funny. He has this two pick game and it's like, okay, I think that's going to be what separates him. And then Wilder apparently I didn't watch the whole game, but had a great game against the BC Lions. It's like, man, these are two young studs that are going to be fun to watch. But man, being a Ticat fan, knowing Richard Leonard is going to be there at least until next year, that's got me excited to see what this defense can do in 2018.
Yeah. Wilder's he'll be here another year too, like not in Hamilton, but with Toronto. Because even though he plays for the Argos, this guy is a special talent. I mean, you watch this guy play, and I think he'll be going down south pretty soon as well.
Yeah, probably. Any other defensive things you want to touch on in this one?
No, I think that's about it. I just like to say that, like, overall, just a great performance by the defense, and it was fun to watch these guys ball out.
Yeah, it's. As much as they didn't allow anything, so there's not a ton of talk, but it just seemed like everyone played well, right? Like there was no weak link because they shut down the running game, they shut down the passing game, they got pressure. Like it was just a total unit effort, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Okay, so normally we throw to special teams here, but there wasn't really much there to talk about. It was fine. Kenny Allen had a decent game. Like there was nothing that stood out that needed to be talked about, I thought, on special teams. But there was something else that happened in this game that I thought I would talk about. And to those that were in attendance at Tim Hortons Field on Friday, I think this will be something you know about. To those that weren't, I think this will be something neat to know. But during reviews, they would show the command center video on the big screen at Tim Hortons Field, and it gave you this interesting insight into what the command center is actually looking at when they make these plays. Like you watched it. You saw them start the play. You'd see the video rewind. Like you saw exactly what the video review official was watching, and it was really, really cool. I hope this is this was apparently just done in Hamilton as a sort of a test project to see if this would work. I really hope this is something going into next season that they adopt across the league, because I think it would allow fans to really see, as opposed to you seeing a replay of it, you're seeing what the command center is looking at. And on like the Luke Tasker catch that was reviewed, it was a catch and a fumble. I actually thought they got that one wrong and it should have been an incomplete pass, but they stuck with the call in the field. The Richard Leonard fumble, there's a lot of people who, oh, was he down? Like you heard the fans boo when it went the wrong way. But if you're watching that, it absolutely was. I saw what the replay official saw, and it's like, I don't know. His knee's not down. His elbow's not down. He tossed it up. But, you know, fans are going to boo regardless when they're at home. That's just what fans do. But I love this. And I really hope this is something that can be extended to the other eight cities, because I think if you get a chance to watch this, it might change your opinion on just what the command center does. And don't get me wrong, both on this show and in articles I write, I'm still going to be hard on them when I think they screw up. But now if we get a chance to actually see what they're looking at, it's going to be a little easier to sort of understand how and why they made their decision. I thought it was really cool, and I hope you get a chance out in Edmonton to see it one day, because I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I think the open-minded fans will, you know, take a look and be like, oh, okay, like maybe it's a little bit harder than what I assumed, but those hardcore Homer fans will still Boo, no matter what. So yeah, I'd love to see it, and I think it's an interesting concept and an interesting idea. And you're right. I hope I do see it next year in Edmonton.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed, though, that it wasn't either shown on TSN or talked about on TSN, because I think that would have added to the broadcast as well. It's kind of sad that this thing kind of went only for the fans here in Hamilton. It's neat because then, hey, you bought a ticket to the game, you get to see it. But I think it's something that every fan should get to see. And now, hopefully, like I said, it'll be extended across the league, and everyone at least who's watching the game in the stadium can get this little extra something that I think will help them understand things a little better when it comes to command center rulings.
Yeah, give them a little bit of sympathy, because they do deserve the criticism they get a lot of the times, but just to show what they're actually looking at and to see where they're coming from, I think will help out the fan command center relationship.
The last game of the season, we're handing out our last Glorious Player of the Week, and I went a little different with this one, Mike. There are a lot of guys, I think, that could have had this award, but I'm going to go with Simone Lawrence. You mentioned it a little earlier when you talked defense and you talked that we had a conversation. This was a conversation we had. I told Mike that I was going to give it to Simone, even though his numbers, 3 tackles, a sack, 3 quarterback pressures, not huge numbers, but I thought that maybe for the first time all season, he really had an impact game. I just felt that he was all over the field, making plays, being involved, even though the numbers aren't huge, but he was just there. He just seemed to always be in the mix when a guy was getting tackled or a quarterback was getting hit. And he did lay the lick on, I want to say it was Schiltz on the Courtney Steven interception. I think he's the one that got the hit on him on a blitz. And I just feel like Simone had kind of a quiet year this year and didn't put up huge numbers across the board. But in this one, it felt like a vintage Simone Lawrence performance where he was just involved in everything. And there were a lot of guys, a lot of worthy people for this week's award. I just think that giving it to Simone was the right choice for this one to go out on the season, with him having probably his best game of 2017.
Yeah, we need that from him. We need that from him next year. He's one of the leaders of this team, one of the leaders on defense. You know, he doesn't need to rack up huge numbers. Like you said, he just needs to be involved in the play, be flying around, be everywhere on the field like we're used to seeing from him. So, yeah, it's great to see Simone Lawrence have a good game.
Okay, so that's the game. Let's talk Ticat news. And, man, I don't even really know where to start here, but I guess I'll say that I did not expect this story to break when I woke up Monday morning. I guess we'll just start at the beginning. It kind of all started when Drew Edwards, who everyone should know by now, is my boss at 3 Down Nation, where this podcast you will find every week. He wrote an article with anonymous quotes from players saying essentially that they didn't want Ken Austin to return, and that if he did, they didn't believe that June Jones or Brandon Banks, two guys we're super high on, would be back. There were claims in this article from anonymous quotes that former offensive coordinator Tommy Condell and former defensive coordinator Orlando Steinhauer were kind of buffers between the players and Austin. And then when both of them left, Condell obviously before the 2016 season and Steinhauer after, that's when things started to go downhill. One player said that Austin lost the locker room this season, and that players who don't normally speak up were starting to speak up and on sort of the problems that were going on with the team. Maybe the most telling quote was when one player said sabotage is a word that had been thrown around a lot in our locker room. Players apparently lost faith in Austin's abilities to make decisions, to make the team better. They cited the trades of John Chick and CJ Gable. And then the article ends with what I think is a very ominous quote, Mike. If June's gone and Kent's still here next season, I have no idea what would happen, but it wouldn't good. It's totally worth a read. I tried to condense this, but it's totally worth a read. You can go to 3downnation.com right now and read it. And there's a lot more to unpack there than just this. I kind of just gave the Coles Notes version. But then if all of this wasn't bad enough, a few hours later, after the article was posted, Bob Young, the caretaker owner of the Ticats, stepped in on Twitter and pretty much poured gasoline on this fire. I'm just going to read you the tweets here that Bob sent out. The first was in reply to Drew. He said, "This is just sad. A cowardly Ticat player, maybe two, complained anonymously to a naive journalist about a former coach." Another tweet said, "Where is the love for a coach who took the Ticats to Grey Cup twice in four seasons. And with the exception of last year or so, Ken Austin was arguably the most successful head coach in CFL history. Good coach, better person. Now, Mike, what the hell do you make of all this?
It's disappointing, isn't it? I mean, I have no problem with the article by Drew. He's just doing his job. This is a big story, and if players want to give their opinions anonymously, then you know I don't have a problem with that either. I think that Bob Young's tweets were kind of unnecessary. I think he could have just, you know, been silent on the issue, let it ride out. I understand that him and Ken Austin have a good relationship and he's backing his guy, but if the players feel this way about Austin, and like we've talked about, there's been so much good stuff happening in the second half of the season, the players don't want to come back and play if Austin's here. I don't think June Jones is going to be here. And I think we're in big trouble next year. I think that if Austin is around and June Jones is gone, we're going to lose a lot of players that have had a great second half of the season. And we might be in full rebuild mode next season, which I do not want to see.
Look, I've defended Ken Austin. I defended him during the team's 0-8 start. I have long believed that he could be the guy that got this team finally over that championship hump. But this information here changes my opinion. Maybe he's run his course here in Hamilton. And the proof is in the pudding. The last 10 games of this season were not only exciting in the on-field product being way better than it had been the first 8 games, but this team won football games. And at the end of the day, fans can talk all they want about backing some one guy or the other, or, you know, in Kent we trust, or in Bob we trust, or drinking Kool-Aid, or whatever you want to say about the organization. Fans can say all that, but at the end of the day, they want wins, and they want their team to be competing for championships. I think everyone who's a fan of any sports team knows their team is not going to win every year, but you want your team to be competitive and in it every year. When Ken Austin was the head coach of this football team, at first, things were going great. 2 straight Grey Cup appearances. They got the 3 straight East Finals. It was looking good. And I had full faith. And then kind of what the article says, when Condell left and then Steinhauer left, that's sort of when this all started to go to hell. And this past season, the beginning of this season, was awful. It was absolutely awful. And then they make all these changes, and they kind of engender this goodwill amongst the football community here in Hamilton, amongst the fan base who, let's be honest, this fan base just wants a championship, just one. They just want one championship. They're not asking for a dynasty. I know I'm not. I'm sure you're not. Just one. One Grey Cup win. That's all we need, and we'll be happy for years. And the team that we saw in the second half of the year looked like it could compete for a Grey Cup. And if you want to bring back a lot of the guys on that team, and if the choice is between the vice president of football operations and all those guys in the coaching staff and players in the field, Ken Austin's got to go. And I didn't think I'd say that at the start of the season, but look, I don't buy tickets. I don't watch games because of who runs the team. I watch it for the guys in the field, and the guys in the field in the second half of the season that are going to be free agents were a hell of a lot of fun to watch. And if they're not going to come back because the guy in charge, has got to go.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. I mean, what we used to say on this podcast, if Ken Austin is the head coach of this team, we will be competitive every year. And we were wrong. We were terrible, like horrendously bad in the first 8-9 games of the season. It was embarrassing, to be honest, to watch this team play football. And then the changes came and the win started coming and the production started getting better on defense and offense. Listen, Ken Austin was a great coach for the Ticats. I mean, he brought him to 2 Grey Cups, and I will be always thankful for that because, you know, we were an okay team when the name escapes me for some reason. The Canadian coach we had.
Marcel Belfay.
Yeah. Marcel Belfay. Yeah. Yeah. When we, you know, we were good. We were in the playoffs and all that stuff, but Ken Austin took us to another level. And this season, it just his offense wasn't working anymore. His schemes weren't working anymore. His protection schemes weren't working anymore. You know, the stubbornness of him, not willing to run the ball, not willing to, you know, switch things up a bit, you know, max protect, all that stuff. I think that he has to go as well. I'm sorry, but this is professional sports, and the times are a change, and things will change as time goes on. You know, Ken Austin isn't going to be with this franchise forever, and that's just the way it is.
Hey, pro sports is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately business, and 2014 was a long time ago. That's the last time the Ticats were in the Grey Cup, and this team looked like it was on the upswing, and if we lose all that momentum from this team going into next season, then what was the point of what we saw the last 10 games? What was the point of the audition of June Jones as head coach? What was the point of making the change at quarterback or making some changes to personnel? Like, why even bother doing that if you were just going to stay the course? You might as well just have left Ken Austin as the head coach and let him sink with the ship. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And Bob Young's tweets, and look, I will forever be grateful to Bob Young for saving this franchise from folding. Yep. But that doesn't make him infallible. And some of the comments I saw to Bob's tweets, kind of rah-rahing him on and all that stuff, I understand that every fan base has those fans who, regardless of what happens, will always – whatever the team does is always good, and they can do no wrong. And that's fine. If that's how you want to be as a fan, that's fine. I can't be that way. I have to look at things – objectively, and I will say if things are going well, and I don't have a problem saying if things are going poorly. But Bob Young's tweets, like, I just, what, why do that? All it did is it was another instance of him kind of being tone deaf to what this fan base is looking for. Because I think for all the people who are out there going, I'm with you, Bob, there are 10 people who are like, Bob, you're wrong. And it goes back to the Art Briles situation all those months ago, and his sort of response to that, which I thought was off a little bit. And this here, he attacks Drew and calls him naive. It's like, why do that? Why call certain players cowardly? Like, it just
cowardly.
Don't know. It just,
it's not a good look.
It feels like this is just a disaster. And I knew it was going to be a pretty news heavy off season for us here in Hamilton, but this not the way to kick things off. Not at all.
Yeah, he's just throwing gasoline on the fire, right? Yep. I mean, who's going to want to come play for an owner who calls his employees cowardly? I mean, it's just not a very smart move on him, in my opinion. And I'm with you. I love Bob Young. He saved this franchise. He turned it around. It's a money-making venture now, and it never was since I've been alive. It has never made money, and he turned that around, and that's a big deal for the Ticats and the CFL as well. He's been a great owner, but he has had some, you know, it's been a rough year for him, to be honest.
Yeah, so this is obviously something that we are going to be paying attention to until there's a resolution. I knew that was going to, like I said, I knew there was going to be a lot of news coming out of Hamilton this year, but I didn't expect us to start this way. And I guess it just means we'll have fodder for the podcast over the offseason, Mike.
Yeah, I suppose we'll have a lot of material to talk about.
Indeed, indeed. All right, the Ticat Player Award nominees were announced last week. You and I, on the last episode, sat down, gave our opinions. My votes were my actual votes, because I get a vote on these things. Yours were just your opinions, but we didn't necessarily agree on everyone, but we kind of had the same guys, either one or two. So we were pretty much in agreement on who landed where. So the award nominees were as followed. Larry Dean doubled up with Most Outstanding Player, Most Outstanding Defensive Player. Ryan Bomben doubled up with Most Outstanding Canadian and Most Outstanding Offensive Lineman. Most Outstanding Special Teams Player unanimously was Sergio Castillo. And Most Outstanding Rookie, also unanimously, was Richard Leonard. Not a single surprise there, right, Mike?
No, not one.
So what do you think of us sitting here? I'll give you the other nominees for the awards, and you can kind of tell me if you think the Ticat guy has a shot. I wrote a piece for 3Down on this, kind of outlining all of the 6 major awards and which ones I thought Ticat players actually had a chance at winning and going on to Ottawa to be the East representative. Let's start with Most Outstanding Rookie, Leonard for the Ticats, obviously. James Wilder Jr. for the Argos, we talked about him a little bit earlier, is Toronto's nominee. Sherrod Baltimore for Ottawa. And Brandon Dozier for Montreal. So this to me, and do you agree, two-horse race between Leonard and Wilder?
Yeah, absolutely.
Who do you think's going to take it? Do you think the flashy running numbers will get it, or do you think you think fans are going to look at Leonard and voters going to look at Leonard and lean towards a defensive player?
As much as I love Leonard, I just don't see him, you know, being a finalist for that award. I see James Wilder Jr. I just don't think you can look past what he's accomplished in, you know, half a season or so. I'm not sure exactly when he became the starting running back, but it hasn't been that long, really. And he just got in there and he's just lit it up. So as much as I love Leonard, I see Wilder getting the nomination.
Yeah, it's I'm hoping, because I think Wilder only started like 6 or 7 games. And yeah, those numbers are ridiculous. But he did get some of those as a backup. The Argos sometimes did dress 2 running backs. And I'm not taking anything away from the season he had. And I think a full season of him, he's going to be dynamite. He's could be a future MOP candidate with the numbers he put up over, if he could put that up over a full season. I'm really hoping that the voters will look and go, Leonard played 18 games, moved from field corner to field half, which is one of the toughest secondary positions to play. It really is, to me, a 50-50 toss-up. And they're, I'm going to go with my heart. I'm going to say Leonard's going to take this. I feel like there's enough momentum around him, but I will not be shocked when the division finalists are announced and Wilder wins it. Most outstanding special teams player, we got Castillo from the Ticats, Martise Jackson from the Argos, Deontay Spencer from the Ottawa Redblacks, and Martin Bedard, who was the long snapper for the Montreal Alouettes. That just tells you how bad the Alouettes were this year. I don't think Castillo's going to win this, Mike. If I had to guess, I'd say Jackson probably takes it.
Yeah, that was my feeling as well. He's been a damn good returner for the Argonauts. So Deontay Spencer had that huge game last week or the week before, but just overall, he didn't really stand out to me this season. So I'd have to agree with you with Jackson.
Yeah, because Spencer put up that 500-yard game in his last game, that could lean people towards him, but I don't know. I just feel like Jackson was not
really a huge standout, you know, nomination from that group, right?
No, though, not like, really.
No one really had a huge season or anything.
But I think if you look league wide, if you look at all the special teams players, there wasn't a ton of. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that one. There was no Chris Williams or Brandon Banks or Gizmo Williams or Chad Owens. Like, there's no guy that like just took the league by storm on special teams. It's kind of a lot of really good players, don't get me wrong, but no real standouts. I definitely agree with that. I just think Jackson did it for longer than Spencer. Spencer had the one big game. I feel like Jackson did it over the course of the season. That's why I think he's the one who's going to take it. Most outstanding offensive lineman, we got Bauman from the Ticats, Sean McEwen from the Argos, Alex Mateus from the Ottawa Redblacks, and Christian Mate from the Montreal Alouettes. Another, again, it's always hard to pick an offensive lineman. I really think Bauman's got a shot here. I think you look at these guys and you could argue that Bauman's the most well-known of the bunch, and that sometimes is enough to get you the nomination.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Bauman too, just because I've paid attention a lot to the offensive line of the Ticats this season, but I didn't do the same for the other teams. You know, the other games, I'm just watching the game, you know, I'm following the ball. So I don't really have a good opinion on the rest of them, so I'll just go with Bauman.
Yeah, McEwen's a center, and that would be really difficult for a center to sort of win. I know Brett Jones years ago with the Stampeders did that as a center, but it's really tough for centers to kind of stand out. There's not a tackle here. Like, it is interesting that all four nominees are Canadian, though. That shows you how good the Canadian content was this year. Speaking of Canadians, we got some replays here too. Ryan Bauman is the Ticats nominee. Sean McEwen is the Argos nominee. Christian Mate is the Alouettes nominee, and then Ottawa's Brad Sinopoli. I want to think that Bauman can take this, but Sinopoli put up 1,000 yards, and that usually is enough to get it to you. I'm holding out hope that Bauman could be a double award nominee, but I could see award voters going, we'll give him offensive lineman, we'll give Canadian to someone else, and I think out of this group, that's not – because here's the thing. If Bauman wins most outstanding offensive lineman, another lineman is nominated for most outstanding Canadian, that doesn't make any sense. So Bauman's either a double nominee here if he wins outstanding lineman, or it's Sinopoli. That's really the only two here. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I think Sinopoli will take it. Like earlier when we were talking about rookie of the year, I think people in general, the offensive stats, you know, stand out to them more. So if I had to pick, I'd say Sinopoli will be the nominee.
All right, now let's move on to most outstanding defensive player. This is an interesting battle. We got Larry Dean for the Ticats, Bear Woods for the Argos, Antoine Pruneau for the Red Blacks, Kyrie Saint-Bear for the Montreal Alouettes. I think Dean can take this. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, once again, although those players don't really stand out to me a bunch this season. So Larry Dean has been steady Eddie every single game he's been in, and I'm hoping that he gets the nomination because he's had a hell of a season.
Yeah, he won't get the nomination for most outstanding player. He is up against Ricky Ray from the Argos, Greg Ellingson from the Red Blacks, and Kyrie Saint-Bear from the Alouettes. This is Ricky Ray's, right? There's no doubt Ray's not going to be heading to Ottawa as the East nominee for most outstanding player, is there?
No, I think it's Ray all the way. Yeah, Ray all the way.
Yeah, just the numbers he put up, he stayed healthy, the Argos finished first. He's a quarterback, and this award does skew towards quarterbacks, which I'm fine with. But and Ray had a phenomenal season. There's no doubting that. So as good as it will be, hopefully for Larry Dean to be most outstanding defensive player, I don't think he has a hope in hell of most outstanding player.
No, neither do I.
All right, so let's move on to some CFL news, and we're going to stick with the awards, Mike. And we're going to do something fun, kind of similar to what we just did. We're going to name who we think the finalists for both the awards will be from both East and West. I hope you have the list there. And then we're going to pick our winners. Let's put some opinions out there. Let's say who we think are going to win the award. Let's start with most outstanding rookie. You said James Wilder from the East. I've said Richard Leonard. Who do you like as the West nominee for most outstanding rookie?
For the West, we got nominations, and I'm going to go with a local guy where I am at, Bo Tang from the Edmonton Eskimos. He's had a great season, you know, in his rookie appearance, and I'm going with him.
I picked him as well. Our buddies over at the Eskimo Empire.
They're really high on him.
Earthquaku t-shirts, yes. Which I think are really, really cool. They're really high on him. I thought he's had a magnificent season. Fifth round pick out of Wilfrid Laurier came out. I think he's performed well on defense. I think he's performed well on special teams. They're high on him. I'm high on him as well. So I got him as well. Now, who do you got? Wilder versus Bo Tang for the award? I guess you're giving it to James Wilder, eh?
Yeah, I got to lean. I'm really high on Wilder, and it's easier to see the talent from him because he's a running back. So I'm going to give it to him.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to Richard Leonard. I'm going to be the homer here. I'm going to give it to Leonard. But if Wilder does get the nomination, I think he takes it as well. I think honestly the league award is whoever wins the East award. I think it's Leonard or Wilder. Whoever comes out of that battle will take home most outstanding rookie. Most outstanding special teams player, we both picked Martise Jackson. So who do you got from the West?
That was also another tough one because there's not a bunch of standout candidates. But I'm going to go with Medlock from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Whoa.
The guy he's just, you know, he had his ups and downs this season. He's missed a couple, but, you know, he's just a great kicker. What can I say?
I went with Roy Finch out of Calgary, just a dynamic return man. I think that late season slump that Medlock went on is going to harm him amongst voters. I think he kind of – the mystique of Justin Medlock kind of went away a little bit there, especially when he had like an 0-for-3 game, I think, against Edmonton. But I'm going to go with – I think the voters like the return men, and I'm going to go with Finch there. And I'm going to take Finch to win the league award. Who do you got taking the league award?
I'm going to go with Medlock. I just think that he's going to take it. Okay. He's the guy.
All right. Next up, most outstanding offensive lineman. We both picked Ryan Bobin for this. I'll spoil my pick. I picked Matt O'Donnell from the Eskimos. Mike, I know you watch a lot of Eskimos games. Did you join me in picking your city mate?
I did not.
Ooh, okay.
I know that Matt O'Donnell is a hell of a player, and I respect him a lot. But I went with Stanley Bryant because he had a bit of he was signed that big contract by the Bombers, and he's had a really good bounce back season. So I'd like to see that story play out as him getting, once again, being the top offensive lineman in the league.
Oh, so you're taking him to win the award too?
Mm.
Okay, I'm taking Bombin. Maybe a homer pick, but it feels like sometimes most outstanding offensive lineman kind of be like a lifetime achievement award, and I think it's Bombin's time to kind of get lifetime achieve, so I got him there. Most outstanding Canadian, you know, debating between Sinopoli and Bombin, but I think we both picked Sinopoli. So out of the West, I think it's a two horse race between Alex Singleton and Andrew Harris. Mike, do you agree or disagree?
I agree. It's been tight. I mean, Andrew Harris has had an incredible season, but I think he's fallen off a bit in the second half of the season. I don't think he's as dynamic as he was in the first half. So I'm going to go with Singleton. The guy is just lights out. He's one of the best players in the league. So my pick is Alex Singleton from the Calgary Stampeders.
And I take it you have him winning the league award?
Yes, yes. Yep, yeah, absolutely.
See, I went with Andrew Harris. And that's because, spoiler alert, I went with Alex Singleton to win the West nominee for most outstanding defensive player. And you know how sometimes they like to, like we mentioned with the Ryan Bombin thing, if he wins most outstanding lineman, they probably, voters will feel justified giving Canadian to Sinopoli. Sort of the same thing here. You give defensive player to Singleton. You get Andrew Harris as most outstanding Canadian. Led the league in rushing. We talked about it a bit earlier. Led the league in receptions, which is incredible. I think he's going to be the West nominee, and I think he's going to.
All right. You convinced me. All right. Going Harris. Okay. I got to go Harris because I'm going to go defensive. I'm going to go.
So interestingly enough, though, when I first did this, I had Singleton written down there because the list I was looking at, I didn't completely forgot about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. It's like the four teams were there. And you had to scroll to get the Bombers. And it wasn't until I scrolled down to look at the East nominees where I was like, oh, yeah, shoot, Winnipeg. Oh, Andrew Harris is outstanding Canadian. Like, it was one of the – because Singleton has been so good. Like, he's – when they do that, like, top 50 player list next year, like, he's got to be top five. And if he is most outstanding Canadian nominee and winner, I wouldn't be surprised. It's whoever – and, again, much like rookie with Leonard and Wilder, it's Harris or Singleton who's going to win this award. I think it's going to be Andrew Harris. So most of the defensive player, I think there's no suspense here. I think we both have Larry Dean and Alex Singleton, no?
Yep, absolutely. And I got I love Dean, but I got Singleton winning this one over him.
Yeah, same here. I don't think there's really any – we don't really have to justify that. Alex Singleton's been fantastic. And now the big one, MOP. We both picked Ricky Ray from the East, and I have a sneaking suspicion we both picked the same player from the West. So who did you go with?
Yeah, I got to go Riley. Yeah, it's just, I mean, guy's I just love watching him play football, and I think he'll take the award as well. Ray had a great season, but you look at the records, and I know giving credit to quarterbacks for wins isn't...
Boo!
Yeah, exactly. But I got to go Mike. Got to go Mike.
Yeah, this is really... really, really tough. And these awards will be voted on before the playoffs happen. I'm going to say Ricky Ray. I'm going to say that he's going to get the award. This is probably his last chance to win it. And voters love a story. And the sort of the redemption angle of Ray getting hurt last year and coming back and getting the Argos to first in the East and potentially getting them to the Grey Cup. I actually think the Argos are going to get to the Grey Cup out of the East. Mike Riley is a great player. If Mike Riley is MOP, you will not hear me say anything about it. Absolutely 100% deserved. But it would not shock me to see Ricky Ray win it. So I'm going to go with Ray slightly. This is probably one of the toughest MOP races to handicap. Last year, we knew who was going to win MOP. The year before, we knew who was going to. Like, it's been easy. Almost by midseason, we're like, this is the guy that's going to be the most outstanding player. This is – Mike Riley was the guaranteed winner back in the first half of the season. Then they went on that slide, and it's like, well, he's not going to win it. And then he has this resurgence, and it's like, well, he's going to – like, it's just – it's been such a weird year for players that I think it's easy to say these two will be the finalists. But it's splitting hairs on who you want to give the award to. So you picked Riley. I'll pick Ray. One of us will end up being right.
It's going to be an interesting player awards, especially for most outstanding player. So, yeah, like in the past, you know, it's been a one horse race. This year, not so much. So that makes things a little bit more interesting.
For sure. So last bit of CFL news, just something I want to slightly touch on. The CFL changed its all-star selection process. I am an all-star voter, so I found out about this when my ballot came to my email last week. But I think it's interesting. It's been out there, so people do know, but it's not like any sort of like inside baseball. But formerly, the CFL would have you pick four receivers and two running backs. And this year, they switched it to five receivers and one running back. I think that's a great change. They also made a change. You used to pick three linebackers indiscriminate of any position. Now you pick two linebackers and one coverage linebacker, which we all know as the Sam linebacker. I just love these changes because I think it shows what the league is now. When's the last time you saw a team start two running backs? How often do you even see a fullback back there, let alone two tailbacks? So five receivers and one running back, and then allowing us to highlight the Sam linebacker, who's a guy that does not really get a ton of recognition because his stats aren't huge. Like Eric Harris, for example, would have been a multi-time all-star under this format. So it's nice to see them make these changes. A little too late for some great players that didn't get recognition, but I think now the all-star team is going to reflect more the teams you see on the field, and I think that's a good change.
Yeah, I think it's a good change too. The strong side linebacker, like you said, doesn't get a ton of stats, but he's doing so much out there with the coverage. So I think it's a great change, and I like the offensive change too.
All right, so let's move on to picks. And this week we only got two games to pick from, but they're two big games. We're talking East and West semifinal. Mike, playoff football, CFL style, is here. So let's kick it off by making our picks. Sunday, first game, 1 o'clock in our nation's capital. The Saskatchewan Roughriders take on the Ottawa Red Blacks. Who do you got in this one, Mike?
I think I'm going to go with Ottawa. It's whatever people say, they want to come to the East and they're going to walk through the East. It never happens. And I think that trend's going to continue. Saskatchewan, I'm not sure if I like this two quarterback system they're using. Glenn comes in, doesn't perform, and then they bring in Bridge like in the third or fourth series. I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of the two quarterback system, and I think that's going to hurt them. So the Ottawa Red Blacks advance to Toronto to the East Final.
I got the Red Blacks as well. Essentially, with the Red Blacks having a bye, this is kind of like they're playing an East Final almost. You know what I mean? Like they were in the playoffs. They got the week off before their playoff game. Like they're rested, and Sinopoli, I don't think, is going to play in this one, but I don't think that's going to be a problem. I could see Saskatchewan winning this game, but I think given the rest and Ottawa's desire to host, to be in the Grey Cup that they're hosting, pushes them over the edge. I think it's going to be a close game, but I'm going to take the Red Blacks in this one as well. The second playoff game, the West semifinal, goes in Winnipeg Sunday. Also, we got the Eskimos and the Blue Bombers. Mike, who do you got in this one?
The Eskimos are the hottest team in the league right now, in my opinion. And that's what you want to do in the CFL. Come into the – it doesn't matter what your record is, as long as you're hot going into the playoffs. And Winnipeg is not really hot, and they have question marks with Matt Nichols being injured and Andrew Harris. I know he played last week, but there's still questions. Is he 100%? And those are two huge players for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. They are at home. The crowd's going to be jumping, I think, but I'm going to have to go with the Eskimos, even though, my heart kind of goes out to the Winnipeg fans and, with that long Grey Cup drought. But the Eskimos head on to Calgary to play the Stampeders in the Western Final.
Well, this is awfully boring because you pretty much said exactly what I was going to say. I'm also taking the Eskimos in this one. The injuries in Winnipeg, if they were a fully healthy team, if the Bombers were, if Matt Nichols wasn't nicked up, if Andrew Harris wasn't nicked up, if Darvin Adams wasn't nicked up, and I don't even know if I don't think Darvin Adams is going to play in this one. If those things weren't around, then I would be siding with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but they're not. And the Edmonton Eskimos have that championship pedigree. They have Mike Riley. Brandon Zylstra is crushed it this year as a league-leading receiver. Adarius Bowman, I feel like, could have a big game left in him. They got C.J. Gable back there running the football. There's a lot. Darrell Walker, yeah, another guy. Completely forgot about him. But
Grimey came back. Old Grimey.
Like, the Esks look like they loaded up to win the Grey Cup this year. And I think they accomplished step one by knocking off the Bombers in the West semi on Sunday. So
I think they're both going to be highly entertaining CFL playoff football. I'm looking forward to both these games.
Oh, I completely agree with you. I would be shocked if either one of these games weren't close or at the very least high scoring, entertaining classic CFL contests. I think both these
and
games
maybe
have,
in the
have
snow
to be really good.
And maybe in the snow,
better.
Right?
Even better.
Maybe in the snow because it brings me back. I don't know. I remember. I think it might have been I was a game between Edmonton and Calgary, I think, and Doug Flutie was playing, and the snow was falling in the playoffs, and that's just so CFL. I'm hoping for some snowball on Sunday.
Yeah, especially because I won't be outside watching the games. I'll be inside, so I don't have to worry about them. But yes, I think we got two highly entertaining contests.
Maybe I'll cook my balls. Cook my balls, my meatballs. It's a tradition of mine on
with the during playoff sauce? Time.
I'll be nice and cozy and warm with my balls.
That's what everyone comes to the show to hear about you talking about your meaty yeah. balls. Okay, so picks are out of the way. Mike, now it is time for some questions. You got we talked last week. You got a slew of them last week. We held off on a few of them to talk about them this week. So, Mike, why don't you kick us off? Start talking about whatever question you want to talk about first.
All right. So the first one comes from at Cam Beamer. I believe a first-time question asker on the podcast. So thanks for the question.
Yeah, welcome to the question section, Cameron.
Do you think Mazzoli has the consistency to get the Cats past being a 500 team and on to the promised land?
Yes, 100%. I absolutely do. Next question. Of course. I do. Look, if you listen to the show, you just listen to this episode. You'll know how we feel about Jeremiah Mazzoli. I don't want to speak for you, Mike, but yes, I do absolutely believe that Jeremiah Mazzoli. Look, we saw when he was a backup quarterback nearly get this team to a Grey Cup in 2015. And I've said since then, and I'll continue to say, he outperformed Henry Burris in that East Final in 2015. So, yeah, I think Jeremiah Mazzoli, what we saw this year, the growth we saw of him as a player. Yes, I believe if he is the starting quarterback for this team, he will not be the reason that the Ticats don't win a Grey Cup. I think he can absolutely get this team to a championship, for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, you give him the reins this season for half the season, and he showed what he could do. So I totally believe that with Mazzoli behind center, this team can be an above 500 team. And I'm not going to say they're going to win a Grey Cup with him because I don't know that. But I think they can be a contender, and I think they can be in the playoffs, and they can be in the hunt with Mazzoli behind center.
Yeah, and look, they're in the East Division. They just have to be a 500 team to win right. the damn thing. You get to 8, 9, 10 wins. You host the East Final. So if this team's a 500 team next year, worst, they're a second-place team. So, yeah, I no doubt in my mind, man. No doubt.
All right, the second question comes from at RobHayes63. Who were the top five free agents the Ticats need to re-sign?
Wow, this team has a ton of high-quality free agents to go through. So how do you want to do this? Do you want me to name my five, or do you want to go back and forth? How would you like to do this, Mike?
You can name your five, and then I'll name mine.
Okay, I'll start. I'll go 5-1. I did decide to put them in order. I got Justin Capicotti, Tony Washington, Luke Tasker, Jeremiah Mazzoli, and Brandon Banks. Now, some will probably be surprised that Ted Laurent, Andy Fantuz, guys like that, did not make the list here. But we have a question, I believe, later about Ticats free agents signing elsewhere, and I think that's why you might not see one of those guys on this list. But yeah, those are my five. Capicotti, Washington, Tasker, Mazzoli, and Banks. What about you, Mike?
You know what? This is going to be pretty boring because
oh my God, you have the same five? Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. And, you know, those guys had great seasons in a pretty bad season for the Ticats. So, you know, top three would probably be, for me anyways, would probably be Mazzoli, Banks, and Tasker. And I really want to see Tony Washington back as well. But if I had to go top three, those would be those guys because they're what's making this offense click right now. They have been spectacular, so that would be my top three.
Yeah, and as much as I love Tony Washington, what he brought to this team, and he's in my top five for a reason. I want him back. I feel like the team could find a left tackle. We went into this season needing a left tackle and a right tackle. We got Riker Matthews. That dude is a stud at right tackle. Mm-hmm. We're good there. We got 4 or 5. I feel like you can find someone else. But I really, really do hope that Tony Washington is back in the black and gold because I think once they got him and moved him to the left side, that I think is when the line really, really took off. And I want to see him back here big time.
Yeah, I want to see those five guys come back and, you know, keep doing what they're doing, right?
Start the season with continuity in the secondary,
right.
Continuity on the offensive line. If they're working in some new receivers, if you're working in a linebacker or two, like Larry Dean, neither of us listed Larry Dean. And as much as I love Larry Dean, you can find middle linebackers. How many great middle linebackers have we seen? Otis Floyd, Jamal Johnson, Ray Williams, Taylor Reed was a really good middle linebacker for this team. We've seen this team cycle through a lot of really good middle linebackers. You can find them. And Larry Dean might be this team's most outstanding player. But if they lost him, it would suck. I wouldn't be happy. But I don't think it'd be devastating. I think the guys I listed, losing them, I think, would hurt a lot more.
Yeah, I totally agree. Moving on from to the next question. It's from @HabsFan3176. Out of all the guys that are set to become free agents for the Ticats this offseason, what players do you think will sign somewhere else?
Does Zach Caleros count?
No, because he's not a free agent.
He's not technically a free agent, but he is a guy that was a Ticat this year that I don't think will be next year. But you're right. He doesn't count. He's not a free agent. So here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to give you two names, but I don't think they're both going elsewhere. But I'm going to say one of Justin Capicotti or Ted Laurent won't be back. I think both will be very pricey. They're Canadian players. Ted Laurent already commands a huge salary. I don't think he's done anything over the last 2 years to not command a similar salary going forward. And I think the team's probably going to need to give raises to both Jeremiah Mazzoli and Luke Tasker, as well as Brandon Banks. I'm hoping all three of those guys will be back. I don't know if they can afford to bring all of them back. I think Mazzoli and Tasker probably more likely than Banks, given what we heard about with the Ken Austin situation. So I don't know if there's going to be enough room under the cap to bring both Capicotti and Laurent back. I hope I'm wrong, but if I had to guess, I'd say one of those two guys won't be back in black and gold in 2018. And the reason I put Capicotti in my top five and not Ted Laurent is Capicotti's younger. And I think when you're forced to pick between two players, you go with the younger guy. And I could see Ted Laurent playing elsewhere. I think there's some good Canadian guy. Justin Vaughn played really well this year in a limited role. I think he could see an expanded role in the future. A guy like Michael Atkinson is a free agent, but maybe he could be convinced to come back. And he didn't play a lot this season, but we saw in the season ago that he can be a starter in this league. So I think you could find a way to get someone not equal to Teddy's value, but you could get a couple of guys to do what he did.
Rotate in.
Yeah. I think he's going to be playing elsewhere. And I know you didn't ask this, but if I got to make a guess, I think he goes home and he plays for the Alouettes. I think that's what's going to happen. And obviously, if we ever have to do a show where we say goodbye to Ted Laurent, we'll thank him for his service to the team and what he did. But I think I could see him elsewhere next year.
Yeah, I could see that too. And, if we do lose or get rid of Caleros and Laurent, I mean, that's a lot of cap space saved, because Caleros is, I'm just ballparking it here, 500,000 plus. And I'm assuming Teddy Laurent's probably pushing around 200,000. So that's, that's 700 and some odd thousand dollars that could be freed up. Now, I think it all depends on if Austin is back. If Austin is back and the reports are true, which I believe them to be, I don't think Banks is back and I don't think Mazzoli's back. So those would be two guys that we'll probably sign somewhere else, because it looks like Bob Young's right behind Austin and he's going to be back. So I don't expect those guys to be back.
All right. Well, let me put you on the spot. Let's say, for argument's sake, Ken Austin is back and those two guys do sign elsewhere. Where do you see him going?
Mazzoli. Just trying to think of the quarterback situations in the league. We know that Montreal could be looking for a quarterback. He could end up there.
About Ottawa? Trevor Harris is a free agent. What if Mazzoli comes in cheaper than Harris? Mazzoli's numbers and record is pretty much the same as Harris's. Could you see him going there? I don't know.
I don't see it happening. I think they'll try to get Harris back. I think that's their guy. But I wouldn't be overly shocked if that happened either, just the way that Mazzoli has played. But if I had to make a pick just on the quarterback situations in the league, I'd have to say Montreal for Mazzoli. And Banks, that's a tough one. You know what? I'll just say if Austin's back, he could just go, screw you guys, I'm going to go sign with the Argos.
Oh, that's what I think too. Tommy Condell's there.
Right.
I could totally see that. And look, the Argos have SJ Green, and Armani Edwards and like Jeff Fuller got hurt, obviously, because he always does. He could be
gone. He's gone.
DeVere Posey played pretty well, but like you never know. Like, yeah, I could absolutely 100% see Ken Austin being back and Brandon Banks being a double blue, and
that would
hurt my soul. I know I don't have a soul because I'm a ginger, but God, that would hurt my soul.
All right, so I think one last question we have here. What is it, Josh? Which one are we missing here?
I believe it's the one about Emmanuel Davis. I think it's a simple question. Why did Emmanuel Davis fall out of favor with the Ticats this year?
Well, thank you for that, Josh, for saving me. But I think it was just something the coaches saw on film. I think that he was underperforming, and the coaching staff made a decision to take him out and put in one of the younger guys. That's the only explanation I could take from it, because the guy's an all-star player, so there would be no other reason to really take him out of the lineup.
I think it's twofold. I think injuries definitely hurt him. Not getting on the field to start the season, I think, was a bit of a setback for him. And secondly, and maybe most importantly, I think he simply lost his job based on performance. Like you said, he wasn't playing well this year. And I think maybe you and I together kind of let past performance cloud our judgment and our assessment of him, because he's been so good for this team for so long. And I think we would both count ourselves as Emmanuel Davis fans. But he was not performing at the level we are accustomed to before he was benched. I think it was in week 15. I think it was after the game against the Argos. I think going to that game against Winnipeg that the Ticats won at Investor Group Field. I think that was the first game Davis was the healthy scratch. Look, I'm going to be a fan of Emmanuel Davis's because just of what he's done, I know he can do that again. But he just got outplayed by guys like Richard Leonard and Don Unamba, guys like that came in when he was injured or when he wasn't playing, and then when he was playing, and they just came in and they played better. And I would like to see Davis come back next year and fight to reestablish himself as one of this league's elite defensive halfbacks. But speaking of Ticats, it could be different colors next year. I would not be surprised if the team released him. He was a big free agent signing last year. They re-signed him to a fairly decent contract. And the team uses the cap savings from moving on from him, a guy like Ted Laurent, maybe even Zach Caleros, to sign players at other positions. Because I think with the young players in Hamilton's second year, we know Courtney Stevens is going to be back. He's got another year in his deal. We know both Richard Leonard and I believe Don Unamba are signed for next year. There's three of your five DB spots. Kane, who moved to Sam linebacker, he's got another year left on his deal. So if you need to, you can move Abdul Kane back to the secondary. Like, this team has some young players in the secondary. If Davis's contract is too onerous, I could see them cutting ties with him, letting him go elsewhere, probably Toronto, because that seems to be where Ticats players go after they leave Hamilton. But I hope he gets a chance to earn his role back here next year, but it would not shock me if he was gone. But anyway, to answer the question, yeah, I think it's simply a case of other guys came in and played better than he did.
Yeah, and you look at some of the really talented players, really young talented players, you know, talk about Riker Matthews. He's going to have another year on his contract, bargain. And you talked about the two young guys in the secondary, Richard Leonard and Uwamba, and even Brooks, you know, these guys.
I completely forgot about Cario Brooks. Excellent point.
Right. Yeah, these guys have been playing at the top of their game. They've been producing, and they're cheap. So, you might see some changes to this lineup, you know, veteran players that you've been in love with over the last couple of years. They might be gone. So just be prepared for that, Ticat fans.
Jalen Saunders, also on a rookie deal. Davin mm-hmm. Coleman, on a rookie deal. Like, there are guys in this team. Even a guy like Brandon Revenberg, who was a draft pick, so he's making more than, say, an American free agent would, but he's not making that elite Canadian offensive line money yet. Like, maybe the Ticats have some salary cap space to make some moves, and maybe they can bring back a ton of these guys. I don't know, because when you think about it, you bringing that up, it's like, you look around this roster, and it's not that they're using inexpensive players simply because they're inexpensive. These guys are performing at a high level. Davin Coleman, Richard Leonard were two of the best players on this defense all year. Jalen Saunders led the team in receiving. Unamba was great. Brooks had flashes of – like, these young players are contributing to this team in a meaningful way. That is the sign, and as crazy as this is to say, that's a sign of good scouting.
Yeah, we could be shedding, you know, close to $1 million in cap space with all these experienced players like Caleros and Davis and others that command big salaries. So we could be coming into a season where we have a lot of young talent, and we could bring in some talent as well through free agency.
Yeah, and keep some of the guys on this team that played this year that deserve raises. Yeah. Like Jeremiah, you can pay Jeremiah Masoli $350,000 to $400,000 if you don't have Zach Caleros making $540,000. So like there's I don't know. I feel like this is going to be a busy offseason here in Hamilton. I think I've said that two or three times already today. But I think when it comes to player movement, I think we're going to see I think this, the Ticats are in some pretty good cap space. And that's complete speculation on my part. I do not know the ins and outs of the salary cap, what the Ticats have spent or not. But just in looking at some of these contracts, remembering when they were signed, and like you bringing up all these American rookies that are performing really well, it got the wheels turning in the head. The old hamster got kicked in the butt and started moving. And yeah, I don't know. Things don't look as bleak as they should for a team that finished 6-12 and missed the playoffs.
They do not, but you know, things could go really bleak really quickly here. I'm just hoping that doesn't happen. Well, I want to get these guys back.
We're Ticats fans. We're forever pessimists. If anything can go wrong, it will go wrong, and it will go wrong in Hamilton.
This is true.
All right, Mike, that's it. That's the show for this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk some Grey Cup. Mike, you're heading to Ottawa for the Grey Cup festivities. We're going to get some firsthand information from you in a couple of weeks after the Grey Cup. You can tell us about all the great things that happened there, all the cool stuff you did. That'll be a lot of fun. But, we're not going to be here next week. We're going to take a week off. We're going to come back. We're going to preview the Grey Cup. We're going to talk sort of the East and West playoffs and what we saw. And then, of course, all the news that happened in Tiger Town and around the CFL over that time. Because, look, if today was any indication, we're going to get a lot of news about the Ticats over the next 2 weeks. So buckle in, everyone. It's going to be a hectic and long off season. But anyway, don't forget, you can always subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or listen to it or download 3downnation.com. And, of course, if you want to throw us a question, we're always looking for some great ones. We got some great ones this week, great ones last week. We're going to get some great ones in the future, no doubt. But you can always hit us up on Twitter with those questions. Mike, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And you can always throw those questions in the comment section on 3downnation.com. So that was episode 94. What's the also?
Exciting news coming up around Grey Cup week involving the Podski WeeWee podcast.
That's right. Way to tease, Mike. Way to tease. Yes. That was episode 94 of Podski WeeWee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.